From ransomware attacks to supply chain compromises, the Cyber Talks podcast will delve into the world of the latest cyber threats and attacks impacting businesses globally. Join us as we speak with C-level executives and security practitioners about the cyber risks affecting their business and how they're addressing these challenges. CyberTalks is presented by eSentire, the authority in managed detection and response. To learn how eSentire can help your team build a more responsive security operation, visit eSentire.com. I'm one of your hosts, Tia Hopkins, the field CTO and chief cyber risk strategist at eSentire. I am Tia Hopkins, eSentire's Chief Cyber Resilience Officer, and essentially my focus is on helping our customers leverage the intersection of people, process, and technology to build more resilient cybersecurity programs. And so in addition to my role at eSentire, I'm a tackle football coach. I actually played tackle football for many years in a few different positions, so I'm really excited today to have the opportunity to bring two of my greatest passions, cybersecurity and football, together and discuss the parallels between the two. Essentially, at the core of it all, from my perspective anyway, whether you're a star athlete or a security leader, a big part of success comes down to resilience. At eSentire, that means helping our customers anticipate, withstand, and quickly recover from cyber attacks through our exposure management, MDR, and digital forensics and IR offerings. But simply put, it means working hard to make sure you're as prepared as possible for whatever might come your way. And today we have a guest with us that knows all about resilience in life and on the football field. And so without further ado, please join me in welcoming Super Bowl MVP, leading rusher for the Denver Broncos, still, and Pro Football Hall of Famer, Terrell Davis. All right. Really, really excited to chat with you today. So we're going to be just talking about resilience. I'll be drawing some parallels between football and cybersecurity, but I think you're really an expert in the matter of being resilient, right? Giving your really impressive background in football. But I think to kick us off here, I'd love to get you to tell us about your journey into sports in general and really what led to your passion for the gridiron.
Wow. So I got to take you back then. I got to take you back almost 47 years ago. It was really simple for me. I was a kid growing up and I had five older brothers. And, you know, they used to beat me up. And, you know, I used to always try to compete with them in all kinds of sports. And I wasn't good at it. But, I would try to compete back with them. And just nothing seemed to fit. Played baseball, wasn't good at that. Played, you know, did a little basketball as a seven-year-old and you know, played soccer and stuff like that. And the one sport that just jumped out to me, it just called my name, was when they signed me up for youth football. And there was really cool because I could beat people up. I could tackle them as hard as I wanted to. And, you know, I could take all of that aggression my brothers used to beat me up with and kind of put it towards somebody else and not only not get in trouble for it, but get praised for it. And for some reason that just stuck. I just love the contact. I love being physical. My first year playing football, I was actually an offensive guard because apparently I wasn't fast enough. So they lined the kids up and they said, you know, you ran like 40-yard gassers and they picked the fast kids and told them to go on this side of the field and all the slow kids had to go over there. And I was where the linemen were. And that's why I went to the slow side. but the whole year when I was playing, I enjoyed being a guard, but I always wanted to be a running back. And I kept pestering this one coach. I kept asking him, can I please play running back? And the first time, you know, he laughed at me. And I'm like, you know, I want to play running back. And because I was slow, he wouldn't put me in. But fate would have it, the last game of the season, actually the second to the last game of the season, we were beating the team pretty bad. And I kept bothering this coach for the whole season. And finally, he was tired of it. He was just, you know, I bugged him so much. He was like, man, go play running back. So he put me in the game at running back, gave me the ball. We had pads on. And I had a nice run. And they kept giving me the ball, and I had another nice run. And that was really the beginning of my career. And then the next game, which was the last game of the season, I was a starting running back. And I think I'd probably had 400 yards rushing, something stupid. That was like a ridiculous game. Six touchdowns. And that was the beginning of my, I guess, my football career. Started right there when I was 7 years old. And I loved it.
That is amazing. I think my favorite thing about what you said is the part where, wait a minute, I get to go out here and like be aggressive and hit people and take all this out and not get in trouble for it. Cause I mean, I have a similar story. I didn't, you know, play football when I was younger. I actually made a youth football team, but refused to play because my brother didn't make the team with me. But when I started playing as an adult, I was like, whoa, I wait a minute, I can come out here and I can hit and do this and do that. And it's okay. That was really attractive for me. So I love that, that you said that.
So you started pads at an early age too?
Yeah, I did. I just didn't stick with it. You know, I enjoyed it. I liked the grind, but I was stubborn. I'm like, well, if my brother can't play, I'm not playing.
That's impressive.
Yeah. So, you know, to the point of running back, I mean, I was never and will never be fast enough to be a running back. And that was not my calling. I started out on D-line and then went to O-line. So I smiled when you said that too. Because I then went to fullback because it's the closest I was ever going to get to running back. And although, you know, middle linebacker was probably my jam, just in terms of the level of aggression that requires, I always had a ton of respect for running backs, the ones that knew how to follow a block, right? Because it's frustrating when they don't. But I say that, you know, and tying in the resilience component of it, you know, you're signing up, just give me the rock. And I know people are coming for me. And I've always said like that's a special, special breed. And so, you know, while I thought middle linebacker was fun, I really feel like fullback and offensive line was the most rewarding in terms of like what you can make happen for your running back when you do the right things. And so I just don't think there's a more resilient position or requirement for more resilience on a field, because sometimes you get one, sometimes you get negative, sometimes you break and you go crazy. So I say all that to say, like, you know, how would you describe yourself as a player, and what do you think your coaches and peers would say about your style and approach to the game?
And it's funny you say that, because when I think about, you know, I think about my career, and if I had to describe it with one word, I would use that word resilient, because I don't know if everybody on here knows, but my career, the path that I took to get to the National Football League was not a traditional path. But let's just talk about that position, you know, as running back. I played multiple positions as I grew up. I played linebacker, I played defensive lineman in high school. I was a kicker. I was, played a little tight end. Didn't play wide receiver, but played running back and fullback. And you're right, that position requires that you have to be resilient. And what that is, you have to bounce back from play to play, not game to game. It is play to play. You just said it. There's times where you get the football, you run right into a brick wall, and it hurts. It's no fun. And you have to immediately in your mind say, okay, that hurt. I ran to a brick wall. I have to bounce back and then have the swagger and the confidence to say that if that wall comes up again, I have to run through it. And it's play to play. And every time you're in a game, you're going to have so many situations where it's required that you are resilient, that you can't, you know, there's been games where, you know, I probably have, you know, 12 carries and 2 yards. I mean, I'm not going anywhere. I'm not going anywhere. And it's like, wait a minute, I got 12 carries for 2 yards. This thing, and you have to constantly try to keep your spirit up. You have to kind of keep the attitude that you are good and that what you're doing will work. You just have to be persistent. But that resilience, resiliency is a critical component to playing the game. And, you know, I'll just kind of take you back to after I went to high school. Most people don't even know, I actually quit football when I was in the ninth grade. So I didn't play my freshman year or sophomore year. And then I came back and played my junior and senior year, but I didn't play running back. I played nose guard and kicker and some other positions. And so I didn't get a chance to be in running back again until college, where I walked on at Long Beach State. And so you talk about these things that happen. I walked in at Long Beach State. We have a football program for 2 years. And then all of a sudden they dropped the football program. So they have no more football. And it's not a university that was really good. So there wasn't a lot of takers after that. I had to go try to find another school. And then I go from Long Beach State to go to Georgia, which is the football mecca. And, you know, the greatest university. Congrats to my dogs, go dogs. Back-to-back champs, by the way. Back-to-back champs, by the way. That's how we do it. But I go to Georgia, and I essentially fail at running back. You know, it was just too big for me. I wasn't the kid that loved the game. And I was trying to get back to that point in college. I never can get back to that space where I love the game. It became too much of a business. Everything became too much of a business. And I never loved it after that. But then things turned around. I got drafted in the sixth round by the Broncos. And of course, everything else is history. So there was a lot of moments in my career where I had to be resilient and I had to bounce back. Even though the path didn't seem like it was going to take me to where I wanted to go, which is ultimately the National Football League, it was just didn't seem that way. So bouncing back from that, that's kind of where I see it being, where my career was very resilient in that fashion.
So that's the word you describe yourself, and yes. And your peers and coaches would say the same thing.
Yes, yeah. Absolutely.
I like it, and you know, and I think when it comes to cybersecurity, I mean, definitely. Doesn't hurt physically as much as running back, but essentially as a cybersecurity professional, you're signing up every day knowing that you're going into the office to protect an organization that someone's coming after. So it is a similar mindset, you know, the game of cat and mouse, and you got to stay one step ahead of the adversaries. And that does take a real specific type of attitude as well. And so that said, I kind of want to take us into unpacking resilience a bit in those different areas. I was saying earlier that it is defined in the industry as the ability to anticipate, withstand, and quickly recover from a cyber attack. And so digging into anticipate a bit, you know, that comes down to really maintaining an informed preparedness for adversity. And I think that applies whether we're talking about cybersecurity or not. But within the realm of cybersecurity, and to oversimplify a bit, what it really comes down to is identifying and prioritizing risk and coming up with a mitigation plan. So when I think about football, I think about watching film, working out, going to practice, et cetera. So, you know, what did preparation look like for you, especially when it comes to the big game?
Yeah, I think cybersecurity and what you do is typical from an offensive standpoint, where we're in our meetings and the defense is trying to, you know, shoot holes and attack our offense. And we've got to find out where we're weak. How do we strengthen those areas up? How do we have a game plan to essentially ward off anything that defense can do? And it's really, you know, preparing. How do we prepare? Every scenario and situation we had to prepare for in our meeting rooms. It may come, it may not come. You know, we look at the defense and we've seen on some tape where, okay, they haven't run this blitz before. But if they do blitz us, how do we respond to that blitz? Right. And so it's not just preparing for the stuff that we know, it's preparing for the other stuff that we don't know and trying to be prepared for all of that. And that's essentially what an offensive game plan is. It's exactly what you do. It's not, that's what it is. And when you watch a football game, if a defense is killing an offense, chances are they were not prepared for that game plan. They did not go through and scour every single blitz that defense can bring. They didn't look at the personnel. They didn't look at, okay, if they have two linebackers on the field and they got five defensive linemen, that's going to be their blitz package. So without getting into all the X's and O's, that's really what it is. And the best way that we could prepare for that, and our coaches did a fantastic job with giving us the information that we needed to prepare. Once they gave us that information, then it was up to the players to be able to scour over that information. You know, just make sure that at practice we're going through scenarios where we're seeing exactly what it is that we should be trying to protect against. And essentially, once you have that, the games becomes easier because you're already anticipating what the blitz is or how they're trying to attack. And then it allows us to be more aggressive so we can have a counterattack. And so the counterattack is the best part of an offensive game plan. And then it tends to get the defense off a little bit. But we did that for a number of years, really good. You know, we went through a 3-year span where we won 46 games in 3 years and two Super Bowls. That's still, I believe, it's tied with the Patriots now as the best 3-year span of any team in NFL history.
That's awesome. I wonder, you know, you go through all that practice and, you know, you prepare, and if they do this, we'll do that. And maybe this doesn't happen, you know, at the NFL level. I'm not sure, you know, watching it from my couch, but I've seen coaching staff like kind of.
You know enough of that. You know enough of how that works. Don't act like
well,
you
me being on the sideline, right? Like I've seen these plans break down. You prepare all these things, you practice, and you're going to do these things, you get in the game, and you don't bring it with you, whether that's the coaches or the players. So how do you make sure you bring all those things with you that you prepared for, you know, and hold on to them when things get a little rocky in the game?
Because I think for most of us, that's what you have to fall back on. People always start asking me, why is technique so important? Technique is very important because that's the one thing that you can lean on when you're tired, when you can't think, when you're beat up, when your brain is not thinking clearly. Just go back to technique. And that's what I relied on in moments of, you know, when I'm, you know, nerves or, you know, big games or whatever. I went back to the basics and try to just lean on the basics as the calming factor. And great coaches, like the coach I had, Mike Shanahan, was one that was really good at making sure that we paid attention to detail and the fundamentals were constantly taught. And we constantly taught basic stuff over and over and over. And we ingrained that because we tend a lot of times to forget the basics and we try to go to the more advanced stuff. But then when moments call for it, we're not thinking clearly. We can't, or it's too complex to do something that's complicated. And that's when we get in trouble. We were able to go back to just doing very, very simple stuff. And not only that, but the thought process was really simple too. You know, not making the moment bigger than what it is.
Yeah.
People have this idea when they see all those Roman numerals on that game that's played in a few weeks, that mm-hmm. game is somehow more important than the games you played back in September or October. Well, maybe it is, but maybe it's not. So we felt every single game was important. And we never cherry picked games and said, all right, this game is more important than that game. And by doing that, it allows you to prepare the same way every single game. It allows you to feel the same way, attack with the same energy every single game. And that becomes more consistent. The way you play is more consistent. The outcome is more consistent. And you're able to just stabilize when you have that mentality and just approach everything as it's very important. And we're not raising everything to say, okay, this game is more important than the other. And that's, to me, was a critical factor in the success that we had over that 3-year span.
Yeah, you touched on so many fantastic things there. One of them being like, why would you get all the way here and change what you're doing?
That's the one thing that drives me crazy when I hear players say, oh, it's a playoff game. Now I need to go do this.
Right.
Now I need to go give more. What were you doing the first 17 games?
You mean you were holding back?
Yeah, you were holding back. Like, that is my biggest pet peeve when I hear players telling me how much they're going to give me now that we're in a spot to win a championship. Yeah. I needed you to give me that energy during that time. Right. And so, yeah, so when people say that, it drives me crazy.
Yeah, I'm with you. And the other thing you said I like was not overcomplicating things, right? Trust what you know, trust your technique and remember the basics. Because, I mean, to your point around being tired, you build that muscle memory, your body just does it versus you having to force it to do it. And I mean, that applies to cybersecurity programs as well in the industry. We have all these things that we should be doing, like patching vulnerabilities and, you know, making sure we're hardening operating systems and things like that. And they're not fun. The basics aren't fun,
but they're
necessary, right? Because when you go on and you layer something interesting on top, well, the foundation can't crumble. And we know when I'm coaching offensive line, I think one of the hardest things for me to do is to get them to master second level blocking without sacrificing, you know, the first level, because it's like they're focused on the new shiny thing and forgetting about the thing before. And I think that's some cybersecurity teams fall prey to that as well. But the last thing you brought up that I wanted to touch on was the nerves. How do you control the nerves?
It's not easy. But I used to get really nervous before games, and I think most athletes do. They'll tell you if they're not nervous, they're not ready. But I was okay with that. But I had to find a way to have nerves, but not feel like that is going to affect the way I play. And so what I started doing was I went and saw a guy with my freshman, my rookie year in Denver. And he was, we did yoga, we did meditation, and he would take me through these mentally play the game. And he would talk about these scenarios. And when I would hear something, I would have this physiological response to it. So if he says, hey man, this play, and just by him saying it, my heart would start pounding. And so we started doing this thing. And what he started doing with me was like, and every time in practice, I want you to start asking yourself the same question or giving yourself scenarios that you have to be in moments that are big moments. And as I started doing that over the time I was a rookie, and I would do it in practice, I would do it, you know, I would just trying to make sure I would make practice run feel like I had to get 5 yards in practice. And anyway, by doing that, just over time, it allowed me to be comfortable with being nervous. And really most times I wasn't nervous because I'd already prepared for it and I'd already been rehearsing for the moment. And right. So as my years went on and deeper in my career, when nerves would come, I would get a little butterflies. And then after that, I would just focus on something else and they would just go away. And that was, and it really, to me, it was just repetition, seeing it, putting myself in there. And my advice to a lot of people is that when you have nerves, it's because you're not prepared most times, mm-hmm. You know, you're not prepared most times. And that's a fact. If most of us, we remember going into a classroom and then all of a sudden the teacher has a pop quiz for us and like, uh-oh, like, you're nervous. But if you go into that classroom and you prepared for it and the teacher said, all right, you have a test, then you're like, all right, you're looking forward to going ahead and taking that test. So it's similar to that. And I've seen players that were really good players. They just could never perform on game day. And wow. They would be so ratcheted up. They'd have so much jitters that they just could not overcome those things. And it's a real thing. It's definitely a real thing.
Absolutely. And I like the point you made about preparedness, one, because it ties in with the whole theme of anticipating and what the desired outcome is there. But the other thing for me, I tell players, if you're prepared, it's not nerves, it's adrenaline. Right. Learn the difference between the two. And I think the players that arrive at knowing like, no, I'm ready to crush it, because it does feel the same way. You know, yeah. Ask yourself, are you prepared? And if your answer is yes, you're not nervous. It's adrenaline. You're ready to go. Let's go. And that's really changed some lives. So that's cool that you said that. It's crazy. Like, philosophically, not by me. I'm having a good time.
that's a good one. I never thought about it like that. But yeah, that has certainly been the case.
So I want to take us into withstand and, you know, getting back to the cybersecurity definitions. That's really continuing essential business functions despite adversity. And so really something a lot of leaders on here with us today are challenged by is really reclaiming the advantage against an attacker that only has to get it right once. They get it right once and it's, you know, kaboom. And so essentially it's like the other team always having the advantage. So, you know, can you think of a time or an example where you faced off against maybe like a bigger, better, stronger component, and how did you overcome that?
Well, I do have one success story, and it was Derek Thomas, who's a linebacker for the Kansas City Chiefs, and we went to that week, and for some reason, the game plan was for me to block Derek Thomas one on one. Derek Thomas is an All-Pro, Pro Bowl, All-World linebacker that rushes the quarterback. And for some reason, the game plan was to send all of our linemen away from him and I go backside and block him. Yeah, believe me, I was not looking forward to that. And I saw that in the game plan. We did it in practice. And of course, in practice, you know it's Derek Thomas. We have a scout team person that acts as Derek Thomas, but it ain't Derek Thomas. So you're not getting the same game action. Anyway, that week, man, I wasn't feeling good about that. And then we get into the game and I'm hoping that, you know, they don't run the defense where we have to adjust and slide the protection away. Well, first series, it happens. They slide protection away. I got to go block Derek Thomas. Of course, it didn't end well. He ends up sacking John Elway. So I'm like, okay, I got beat. We're going to change protection. They get into the same protection. A few plays later, same thing. Lyman goes away from Derek Thomas. I have to block him one-on-one. He beats me again. He flushes John out of the pocket. He doesn't sack him, but he flushes him out of the pocket. John throws the ball away. So we run it two more times. So about four times they're running, he beat me the first four times. So at this point, I'm like, wait, listen, they're not changing protection. We keep running the same thing. So I got to get good. I have to be able to block this guy. So I can't lean on them to just, you know, all of a sudden say, okay, we're going to change it, because apparently we're not doing it. And so by the fifth time we do it, it's my moment. I'm like, I'm just going to go all. I got to block him. There's no other way. I got to block Derek Thomas. Block Derek. Not only block him, I depleted Derek and put him on his back. Yeah, it was one of my best blocks ever. Nice. You got to look it up. Hopefully it's on YouTube somewhere. You can find it. One of the best blocks that I've ever had, and I blocked Derek Thomas. And that right there put the confidence that I got from that play and realizing that, number one, the team entrusted me. They believed in me enough to put me in this situation. So I had to reward them and show them that they were right for doing that. And it also gave me it was the biggest confidence booster that I'd had. And it was like, okay, I've arrived. But, you know, like, if I can do that on this field, then I can do anything out here. And that was a big moment.
Man, I got to go look that up.
Yeah, you got to see that.
I give out pancake stickers to offensive linemen. Well, send me, D-linemen, so I got to get you one of those.
That's exactly what I did. I'll be expecting all my pancake stickers.
That's amazing. Wow. All right. I'm going to stop geeking out on that. That's incredible. So I'm going to move us into recover, because I know we want to have time to get some questions from the audience here as well. But when we think about recover with respect to a cyber attack, it's essentially restoring business functions, you know, during, you know, the attack and after. But can you think of a time, to take it back to football, where something happened that took you or your team off course? That you had to bounce back from an injury, a big loss, you know, that you thought would have been a win. And how did you handle that?
Yeah, well, the biggest, it happened in the same season, but the outcome, for example, we lost to Jacksonville in the division round in 1996. We were a really good team. You know, we were 13-1 at a period in the season. We had already clinched home field advantage and everything. And from that period, we just started playing not championship football. It was just, we're kind of going through the motion. We just allowed all the talk just to kind of get to our heads a little bit. And we didn't focus on the basics. Again, we didn't practice the same way. We didn't do things the same way. And by the time we went through the season, we lost. You know, we ended up finishing 13-3 that year. And then we had a bye. So we had lost everything in terms of our energy, our swag, our momentum. And then we played Jacksonville in that game, and we ended up losing that game. And after that game, every man to a man says, even to this day, we all point to that game as being the game that really got us to – It was really a career changing game. You know, we were so embarrassed by that. And I remember sitting on the sideline when the team had already gone to the locker room. I am on the bench, and Shannon Sharp was on the bench, and we just looked at each other and we said, "Man, this is never going to happen again. You know, it's never going to happen again." I mean, we were just so hurt by it, because we essentially wasted a season. But that became the catalyst for the run that I talked about, the 3-year run. Or 2-year run after that, where we won two Super Bowls, and we needed that game. We always pointed back to that game as being that game that that got us back on track, because we realized that if you don't play your best game, I don't care who you play on that level, you're going to get beat. And I would imagine in your business, you have to be on your best game. You talked about them attacking and only have to be successful once. Well, you really got to be on your game every single minute, every second, every minute, every hour. There's no time to feel like, okay, yeah, we stopped a lot of people and we feel really good about where we are. You don't have time for that. Yeah. And so that was the comparison to we let down and let, you know, we let the criminals in. And we after that, we realized that we can't do that. And we have to play every game as if that game, like I said it before, every game matters. And we went back to that philosophy kind of after that game, and it served us well.
I love that. I had a coach say to me, and this was early in my days of football, he said, football doesn't build character. It reveals it.
Yes, yeah.
And I said, I don't know what he means, but he sounds serious. I'm sure I'll know one day. And it happened one day when I first started playing offensive line. We had a linebacker. I mean, she was a beast. A simple run play. She comes barreling in for a blitz. Next thing I know, I'm looking up at the sky. That was my moment where, you know, I had to decide who I was and if that wasn't good, who I wanted to be. And that was my moment where I was like, okay, like I'm going to get up and I'm going to be resilient. And that changed my life to your point of confidence. Like, I was like, okay, I didn't die. So let's do this thing. Right. And I ended up being, obviously I'm coaching offensive line. So I ended up being becoming a very good offensive lineman, but back to the situation that you just explained, I mean, the team's got to be down in the dumps, right? And then it could have gone the other way. You know, it could have been a couple of you that decided that was never going to happen again. But if the whole team isn't on board, you know, it doesn't go that way. So my question for you is, you know, what advice do you have for leaders today trying to motivate their teams in a situation that might look like that?
Yeah, I had one of the best in Mike Shanahan. What I took away from Mike was he led, and I always tell people, lead with influence, not with authority. And we find ourselves, we see some coaches who come in and everything is about, it's they're yelling at you and they're expecting you to follow them, not because you want to, but because you have to. And when I see that happening, that's always the red flag for me. Mike was a guy, he was like, you followed him because you wanted to. And he influenced you, everything he did, the way he talked to you, the way he gave you the whys, what he did for you in terms of preparation, how he, when you saw him work super hard, you're like, well, if my coach is working that hard, I can't give anything less. And so when you start to see that, to me, it was really cool to see Mike. And I take a lot from him. I pattern a lot of my leadership skills based on Mike Shanahan and the way he led, because it was a partnership. It wasn't this kind of vertical leadership ladder we see a lot. It was more horizontal. You have people who led from where they are. Like you didn't have to be a head coach or a position coach to lead. Players led, and he allowed that and he fostered that in that locker room. And it was just a thriving, fun environment. We enjoyed being there. The chemistry was great. You know, people were we come to practice early, leave late because we wanted to be there. And then the work was fun. Like, you know, we worked hard, but he made it fun and enjoyable. And we all felt like we were vested and we had some equity in what we were doing there. And that's to me how the environment should be when you have an environment that's great culture, and you're trying to build that, that environment. I think those are some of the key things that I remember having there.
Yeah, that's awesome advice. I love that. Because it's along the vein of essentially be the type of leader that you would want to follow, right?
Yeah, there you go.
It shouldn't require effort for the people leading you to follow you. I'm a big believer that a leader is only as successful as the people that are supposed to follow them, because they might not, right? No, I love everything you said there. So I know the audience is probably chomping at the bit for me to get to their questions. So I'll wrap it up with one or two more here.
Okay.
I think so. The road to the big game is long and hard and full of ups and downs. And of course, I'm saying all this from the emotions that I go through from my living room screaming at the TV on Sundays, right? But I'm sure as a player, the level of intensity is through the roof. So what does it feel like to be a part of the last team standing, you know, as a champion and an MVP to put the icing on the cake, right?
Yeah, it's almost indescribable because there's really nothing I can compare it to. Always when kids ask me that question, I always say, hey, imagine going to a toy store and somebody saying, hey, you can go in there and get any toy you want to. And just go shopping like that. That's kind of the feeling that I equated to. But I think the rewarding part to it is that, you know, when you look at your teammates and from day one, you go to training camp and you just like look at all the hard stuff, how tough it was, you know, the injuries, the games that you guys didn't play well, where you felt like that you guys weren't going to win a game or you get to a dip in the season. You know, it was just practice every single day. It's just all that stuff. And you start thinking about it and you're like, wow, like we did all that. And now this is the big reward. We are the last team standing. And it's really from day one, most teams have that goal. Like when you go to training camp the first day, your coach, the goal is to win the trophy.
Right.
And so once you get it, it becomes the culmination of all of that hard work, the relationships, the ups, the downs, the sad parts, the happy parts. And you start to feel all of these emotions. And it's like, that's it. Like we've conquered. We're the best team in the world this season. And nobody else can say this. Nobody else could ever say that this season they were better than us. And that's rewarding. That's one of the greatest rewards. And you realize your team, you didn't do it by yourself. You did it with all your teammates, your coaches. It's just very satisfying and to get there and then you can brag a little bit. It feels good to be able to walk off that, you know, at the stage and know that we have no more games to play. You know, we won our last game. We're the only team that won their last game in the playoffs, and we're world champs, and there's nothing like it. Kiss that Lombardi trophy. You know, you're getting those rings coming in, and that bond never goes away. Matter of fact, we had our 25th anniversary, our first Super Bowl this year, and all the guys came back for the game and came back to Denver, and the bonds are strong. The storytelling, the friendships are all doesn't even feel like it was 25 years ago that we did this, but forever when you look back at the look inside the insight, whatever, the scroll through your internet and look up Super Bowl champs, that 97-98 team will always be there. So that's fun.
That's fantastic. Yeah, it got me excited. I'm ready to go put the pads on and see if I can still walk in them.
I want to see it. Send me some video. I'm gonna see you.
I will.
You gotta send me some games.
I'll do that. This has been awesome. I'm gonna pivot over to take some questions from the audience, but I have one more for you. Probably my most important question of the day. Who you like for Sunday?
I've already revealed. Normally, I don't ever reveal my pick until the night before. And the reason that I never do that until the night before is because some things happen. Things happen before the game that alters the game, you know.
I see.
You know, like players getting in trouble and all that other stuff. Blah, blah, blah. But I am going towards, I'm going Eagles on this one. I think Eagles are going to win this game. And I just feel like they're built differently. Like they can win multiple ways.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas I feel like the Chiefs, if Mahomes doesn't have a good game, they won't win. And I think they put a lot on him, as they should. I think the Eagles' defensive line is phenomenal. They've got a great rotation on that line that just causes problems. You know, they've got more sacks in the league than any other team. And then the back end is pretty good. They're going to have the opportunities to get some of those Patrick Mahomes kind of, you know, he likes to throw unorthodox and crazy. They'll capitalize off some of that. And I just think, I think offensively, the Chiefs, if you look at the game they played against the Bucs in two Super Bowls ago, I think that same formula is what the Eagles are going to deploy. And it's going to be tough for the Chiefs to win that game. So that's my pick so far. I'm a Bronco anyway, so I don't know Chiefs fans. They might get upset, but
anyway. I hear you. I can't wait to see how it plays out. I mean, I can't disagree with anything you've said. I'm having a hard time saying what I think is going to happen for a lot of the reasons.
Who are you picking?
I guess I do need to answer the question I asked, right?
Yeah,
I
mean, you going Chiefs?
I want to. I do. Like, I'd like to see the Chiefs take it. I'm just having a hard time convincing myself that it'll, you know, that it's in the bag. I think it's going to be a really good game. I hope it comes down to, like, you know, who capitalizes on mistakes and who makes the least mistakes, and it doesn't turn into some unfortunate series of events. I just wanted to be a good game, and it'd be cool if the Chiefs pulled out.
The Chiefs got a lot of injuries at receiver too, and that scares me. I think Mecole Harmon's out. I know Juju Schuster's dealing with a knee, swelling his knee. So, Travis Kelce's a beast, but they're going to need more of that. Pacheco's good. I think he's going to have a serious impact on this game. But I think
Travis's brother is going to play next level. That sibling rivalry right there is going to be interesting. So I think that's going to take the whole line to a whole new level.
Well, they both have one. So it's not like one brother saying, hey, I'd like, you know, I have one already and I'd love for you to get one. They both have one. So I don't.
Right.
At home, they're both trying to get their own too.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I'm gonna get to some of these questions from the audience here. Oof. All right. We've got quite a bit. Let's see. Broncos had high hopes this past season, but it's disappointing. Although the new coach, big challenges remain. How does the new staff promote resilience for the organization, and how does such a situation apply to cybersecurity? I suppose I could take the second half of that.
Yeah, well, I think the best part about this is that the coach that's in is Sean Payton. Sean Payton has done this before when he went to New Orleans, and they were, I think they were 3-13. So he's seen what an organization has looked like and what it should look like. And so he has gone through that transition. That's what gives everybody here in Denver confidence that he can do it again. And players respond to coaches and environments. And when they see things that looks familiar to them, you know, there's sometimes coaches come in and for example, when Hackett came in, he brought a lot of stuff that didn't look familiar to these players. They didn't know what the heck he was doing, but they trusted him because they were like, all right, you're the head coach, I'm gonna follow you. But I think Sean brings in a level of respect, a level of trust, and these players are going to play for him because he's already done it before and he's already displayed. And just being here a few days, you can already hear it that there's a lot of stuff that's familiar to these players that they're going to respond. And Denver, we lost, you know, we 5-12 last year, but a lot of those losses were like one score games. Yeah. And we were the worst scoring offense in the league. I know Sean can get us from the worst scoring offense to somewhere in the middle, if not higher. And that's really what it's going to take to get this team back on track.
So I think, you know, to tie that to cybersecurity, it sounded like some of the keys were, I mean, the familiarity, right, to drive the confidence within the team and get some buy-in. And some excitement around what the future could look like and make sure everybody's, you know, charging forward in the same direction. Yeah. Cool. What we got next here? Let's see. I like this one. How have you seen the game of football evolve since your playing days, and what changes would you like to see in the future?
Wow. It's changed. It's changed a lot. But I think all the changes have been really, really good changes. I mean, just like little things, right? Like touchdown celebrations. It seems silly that we couldn't celebrate when I played. Like I did the Mile High Salute. That wasn't a elaborate touchdown celebration. But anything more than that, you're going to get a flag. And I think the NFL realized that this is entertainment and people want to see that. So they've changed that. They've also changed the extra point where when I played, the extra point was right on the goal line. Like no one was missing that kick. And now they moved it back where you have to make a longer extra point. You talk about 2-point conversions have gone through the roof. Teams are going for it on fourth down way more than we did back then. You talk about the way the passing game in this league has really made quarterbacks all seem like they're Hall of Famers because everybody's throwing the ball everywhere. And it's not fair to compare these guys to the guys that played, you know, when I first started playing. So there's been a lot of changes. I think the equipment that they've changed has been awesome. Recognizing concussions has been something that's been positive where you no longer can just have a hit and say you're fine. They have an independent neurologist watching who can pull you out the game. So the game is much more safer, not only for the pros, but college. My kids are in youth sports. So I like the fact that the NFL has only not only done it for the big, you know, the pros, but they've implemented programs on every single level to make sure that players are safe. And that's been a number one priority for them is player safety. So the game it's evolved. And listen, I'm a guy who I love the game today. I am not the old school guy who says, oh, I hate this game. They don't run the ball anymore. Hey, here's what I say about the running game. They don't run the ball a whole lot, which is cool. It preserves a lot of my stats. It preserves a lot of my, you know, things.
I love that.
They don't run the ball no more. So ain't nobody running. As a matter of fact, you guys may know this, or you may not know this, but I hold the record for most rushing touchdowns in the Super Bowl with 3. And so do you think I'm sitting there rooting for somebody to rush the ball 3 times, run to have 3 rushing touchdowns in the Super Bowl? No, I am not. So please throw the ball. Don't run it on the goal line. Throw it.
Oh, man. All right. Let's get to the next question. You may have like touched on elements of this, but I see I want to handle it. Who is the toughest team and individual opponent that you played against? And how did you prepare differently, or did you prepare differently when you knew you were going to be playing them?
No, I mentioned, first of all, I mentioned that I tried to prepare every game the same. There was, right. there was really no game that I felt like, even though you face different people, my respect for all players was just, I wanted to be ultra, you know, prepared. Now, the most difficult opponent, even though I was prepared for it, was when we played the Chargers and they had Junior Seau on their defense. And he was their, he's a linebacker, middle linebacker, but he doesn't play there all the time. And that's the problem. You know, when you look up Junior's, he's completely, he's all over the place. Like, I think their defensive plan is we have 10 guys. You guys know where you guys are going to be. And they probably told Junior, do what you want to do. Because that's what it felt like. You can never prepare enough for where he's going to be, what gaps he's going to shoot. It would be some things where it's kind of unorthodox. We're like, wait a minute. Why? You know, he can't blitz from where he is. And all of a sudden, he blitzes. And so you had to prepare. And then not only prepare, but you had to be agile enough to be able to pivot and adjust to Junior. But yeah, Junior Seau was a tough one to play against. Play against him twice a year.
So when you're performing at your best and other people on your team or other players on your team aren't, how do you motivate them to correct the situation or to get them to perform at, you know, what their highest level of performance is?
Yeah, that's a great question, because one thing that, so I was the captain of the running backs and, you know, offensive captain a lot of times. And the one thing that I wanted to make sure that I knew was I had to know what players respond to certain things. I could not treat every player the same way. There were some guys that I could raise my voice and you know, and be a little bit more forward with. They responded to it. Some guys, you couldn't approach them like that. You had to come at them with a different approach. And so I found out very quickly that I had guys in my room that I couldn't treat everybody the same way. And yes, definitely saying something. There was nobody that I just didn't say anything to and let them just continue to struggle. But you have to know how to approach different players. And, you know, in organizations, the number one job as a leader, in my opinion, is getting to know who's on your team and really getting to know them, not just names and, all right, you know, where they're from, like really getting to know them. What makes them tick? Why are they coming to work every single day? How do you create that bond and that level of trust with them? And that's what I was able to do. Most guys responded to, and I said, lead by influence, not authority. I would influence, you know, I would go out there and I would connect with them. Like, listen, man, I'm struggling too today, but I'll go out there and show them that even though you're struggling, you still can go out there and have a good day. So to me, it was really about my actions on the field did a lot of the speaking for me. You know, a few times I'd have to go have conversations with them about their play and having to step it up. But for the most part, my equity was built by what I and not what I was saying.
So I got from that lead by example and meet people where they are, right?
Yes, okay, indeed.
Last question. What advice do you have for overcoming failures?
This is going to sound crazy, but my other little thing that people always say to me, it's this thing, we call it embrace the suck. And to me, failures are a very important ingredient in success. It is. It just, I look at my failures and I'm always taking something away from it. I learn more, and I think we all do. We all learn more from our failures than when we have success. An example is when we play a football game and we win the game, we don't watch the tape of the win. We don't watch that. Well, when we lose a game, what do? We scour through the tape. We see what things we did wrong. How can we improve? And we try to improve those things. So we're constantly trying to better ourselves after we've done something where we failed. I thank God for failing. I failed in college. I told you it was at Georgia. I failed at Georgia. All the lessons I learned there when I failed, they served me on my path to becoming the player that I became. And so when I fell at something, whether it's in business or in sports, I don't look at it and get, you know, get discouraged by it. I mean, obviously you don't want to fail, but to me, I try to take that and say, okay, I'm not going to fail in vain. I'm going to fail and use everything that I'm going to take pieces from this. And so I don't do this again. And how do I build upon this next time that I'm in the same position? So failure is something we all going to go through. We're all going to fail. I think I'm still failing. And, yeah. But it still goes back to resiliency. It still goes back to trying to get better and taking those lessons that, taking those things from whatever you failed, and helps you go. This is how your DNA, this is how you're going to be built and your DNA is built. Your DNA is not going to be built off you having success all the time. I've never heard anybody who won at everything and it's great. Like, we've all failed, and that becomes your DNA. And I thank God for that. I thank God that He exposed me to that and gave me that lesson, allow me to grow from the things that I wasn't good at.
Yeah, that I think that was a perfect last question, because that was a mic drop moment right there. I agree with everything you said. I don't think you can build resilience without failure. Mm-hmm. So I love the concept of embrace the suck, because you do have to accept failure as part of the journey. I think it's necessary, and it's temporary, right? It's only permanent if you quit.
Yeah, I call failing, I call things that we hate to do. Like when you fail, there's a process called eating your broccoli, I call it. And what that means is, when you fail at something, go back and look at it. Go back and wipe. But nobody wants to see it. Like, you know, you did it. Most of us, if we did it, I've done some speeches where I'm like, man, that was terrible. But I have to go watch it. That's eating the broccoli. I got to eat the broccoli so I can grow. Because if I fail and I don't go back and watch it or learn from it, then it was for nothing.
Yeah.
Nothing.
Wow. There you go. I could talk to you about this kind of stuff for hours, days. This was amazing. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Terrell, for joining us. And thank After Sports and Entertainment Network Group for your support. Thank everyone for joining us today out in the audience. I was incredibly inspired by this discussion. It was so much fun.
Salute you.
You too. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
To learn how Easton Tire can help your team build a more responsive security operation, visit eastontire.com.